Hello, everyone, and welcome to an FWFB Pod Quiz podcast. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. And Darius Austin is with us from jolly old England. I don't know how jolly it is over there these days. Anyway, Darius, how are you today, and where can you be reached on Twitter?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Chuck. You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64, and I'm quite jolly because I've just received a Vlad Guerrero Jr. Fisher Cats jersey in the post from my good friend John McGee from the Battleflips and Nerds podcast. He's just got back from Boston, so quite excited about that.
Yeah, I don't blame you. The only minor league player jersey I have is a Wisconsin Timber Rattlers Brett Lowry jersey, which oddly enough seems to have its own sort of vintageness to it. Would you agree? Do you remember Brett Lowry?
Yeah, I do. He was kind of one of the first guys I think really remember in fantasy that people got super hyped about and then just never panned out. I remember Brett. I think I've been following baseball for all of Brett Lowry's career, or lack thereof.
Yeah, there has been a lack thereof. I mean, I'm betting that Brett Lowry is somewhere on a bar stool right now explaining to everyone how he should be starting in the upcoming All-Star game. That just seems like the kind of fellow he turned out to be. It was odd. I had a friend who works for the Timber Rattlers, and he very devotedly told me that Brett Lowry was amongst the biggest jerks in the history of mankind. And that certainly seemed to have played out because organizations could not tolerate him. But anyway, I made a player list this week, and if you'll probably notice, I'm sure Darius did, that it's fringy. But, you know, fringy for me is, you know, not quite nearly as fringy as it is for some other people. So I'm kind of excited about us going over this list. Darius, the first player on the list is Josh Bell, the third baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And what did you see and what did you think when you looked into Josh Bell?
Well, he's a guy, I think, who was not considered to traditionally have the first base profile, with him being kind of maybe more of a contact guy. And I think most of the prospect reports kind of had him topping out at 15 to 20 homers. So last year's power outbreak was certainly a bit of a surprise to me. And this year we kind of seem to be getting more of that maybe 15 home run guy, which is a bit disappointing, really, if you drafted him hoping for that mid-20s power. And I think that the swing just doesn't look that geared to hitting a lot of balls in the air. He's still got almost 50% ground balls. He's actually quite a balanced hitter. He is kind of line driving it to all fields. And so he's not the kind of guy you think is going to just yank a bunch of home runs down the line. He doesn't seem to be that kind of player. So he's not really got a split issue with him being a switch hitter. But he's just not generating a lot of power with that swing. And I don't really like the swing, to be honest, or at least the setup of the swing. He seems very inconsistent with his toe taps and how he approaches each plate appearance. I watched quite a few videos, and I'm not sure I watched him replicate the same process twice. So I think there might be a little bit of an issue with consistency at the plate there as well. But he's still a 25-year-old, so maybe there's more to come. I just think that prediction that he's a 15 to 20 homer guy is kind of playing out in front of our eyes right now.
Well, you know, he's an 11.3% walk guy, which is really nice, and his strikeouts are down just a skosh. But his ISO is down from 211 to 133, which I think is a pretty frightening drop. But oddly enough, his ISO in 2016 was 133 as well. He's not really a very good running player. Like, he doesn't run very fast, so you don't expect him to be a high BABIP guy, but the 290 BABIP doesn't really scream that he's having extraordinarily bad luck either. So I think the 26 home runs that we saw in 2017 largely look like a fluke right now, and that is disappointing indeed. Let's talk about the next player on the list, and that is one Chris Taylor, who was one of the main components in me screaming to the hills that I thought the Dodgers were going to regress this year. But he was still kind of loved in drafts. There was a lot of people who thought he was quite the sneaky pick, especially with his shortstop and outfield eligibility. One of the various middle infielders around baseball that has been spewed out from the Seattle system over recent years. I mean, Brad Miller is one that just went, now he went from Tampa to Milwaukee. But there's a number of guys that are, ended up all over the place from the Seattle system. What do you think about Chris Taylor's year so far, Darius?
Well, there are things that I like about Taylor. He still gets on base at kind of a nearly 10% walk rate, which is good, and he's still getting to lead off for the Dodgers almost every day. So that that lineup, while it's not been incredibly good, they're still, I think, in the top 10 offenses, and their production is coming from surprising places like Max Muncy and Matt Kemp, but it is still coming. Jock Peterson's been ludicrously hot when he gets to start against righties. So there are run producers in that lineup for sure, and Chris Taylor is getting to take advantage of that by just walking a bunch and being at the top of the lineup. But it is a disappointment, I think. I'm really worried about the speed. He's just 3-for-8 this year, which is a huge drop from his 17-21 last season. And he was a guy I thought, oh, well, I expect some regression, but at least I'm going to get, you know, kind of at least 12 to 15 steals out of him. The way he's been running the bases so far, I'm not sure that I will. I don't know what's wrong with him there. He hasn't dropped a ton in speed, but the base running itself seems to be down. So I'm hopeful that he can turn that around. But he's not a super young guy anymore either, so I don't know that he will. And the other thing is, I think his traditional fantasy stats do maybe underrate him slightly, because he's got 15 doubles and 7 triples, which is the most in the league. So if you are in a slugging league or total bases or points, then you've probably got a bit more out of Chris Taylor than in the standard 5x5, where the batting average is kind of disappointing, and he hasn't really given you that speed. So I think he's fine. I think he's a perfectly usable guy, but he's not like spectacular in anything. And without that speed, I think he's kind of probably going to disappoint you no matter what else happens this season.
Well, I think part of the irony here is that his BABIP is down 40%, 40 points, from 361 to 319, 42 points. And his batting average is down 40 points. So in the 361 BABIP was, you know, last year it was even crazier high towards the, you know, two-thirds point of the season last year. But if you look at projections, I mean, projection systems have him at 91 RBIs and 62 runs scored. Flip-flop that. 91 runs scored and 62 RBIs and 8 steals. I really don't think that's remotely what people were hoping for. When they drafted him, I think they were hoping for the off chance that there would be a repeat. I think people thought there would be some regression. I think the regression's gone a little further than they originally hoped. Let's talk about the first baseman from the Chicago White Sox, who may or may not be sort of on the trade block here as we move forward. He's 31 years old already. He's a Cuban import, and obviously took the world by storm his rookie year, and certainly is a usable player. But I wonder, Darius, what you think so far of Jose Abreu's season versus where he was drafted, and I think what people were hoping for.
I guess people are probably a little disappointed. Nothing is spectacular. The batting average is still pretty solid. I think we were talking a little while ago in the FWFB chat about batting average, and I think the league's sitting 245 right now. So Jose Abreu's batting average is still over 40 points better than the MLB average, which is pretty useful. But if you're expecting the 300 guy with 30-plus home runs, it's not quite been that pace. At the same time, it's not like he's had no power. Everything kind of looks the same to me. The peripherals are the same. I think he's probably been a little bit unlucky, and I think he probably, you know, had a great season last year, and we're just getting a little bit of a downstretch now. So I think he'll be fine. I don't see anything to suggest that he's kind of dropping off a cliff. He's not swinging and missing more. The power hasn't gone away. The launch angle is down ever so slightly, but it's still kind of right in line with his other career numbers. It looks just a bit more like 2016 and Brady than 2017. So I think he'll probably go on a hotter streak at some point later this season, and you'll end up with a guy who hits at least close to 300 with 25 to 30 homers, and that's probably not too far off what you should have been paying for when you drafted him.
I think there was this sneaky vibe when he was drafted, you know, right after the Elite first baseman that you know, that people had waited a little bit longer and had gotten a guy that could be really elite. Some of the things that I thought were wrong in that thought process is I just thought that the lineup itself was taking so many hits. You know, they're in the basic rebuild. There was so many variables trying to get more offense out of main components besides him being, you know, Wellington Castillo, who started off like as their cleanup hitter. Johan Moncada certainly was no sure bet. He's been pretty streaky this year as well and still really struggles against lefties. And Tim Anderson, I just thought that there was I think it needs to be considered an outlier when a supporting cast can actually really hurt a player. But I think, you know, hoping for Daniel Polka and a lot of these guys that they're trotting out there right now, the Charlie Tilsons of the world, who I think is not actually still on the team right now, but Adam Engel. I mean, you're just really asking a lot. Omar Narvaez is their replacement at catcher. I think the sneaky in between first two tiers of first baseman pick that was Jose Abreu is certainly not something that people are pointing to and saying, wow, this is what something that really helped my team.
I think the other thing with Abreu is just kind of, he's just plays every day, and like, I don't know that it's ever going to look all that exciting, but then you kind of look up at the end of the season, you're like, oh, Jose Abreu was like the fifth best first baseman because he got to 100 RBI and he just played every day and got you that useful batting average over 650 plate appearances. And those aren't the kind of things that look that flashy really over the course of the season. He doesn't have like the E5 15 homers in a month type things, generally speaking. And so I think probably when we look up at the end of the season, it will be fine, but you won't necessarily have felt like he was having an amazing year all year.
Well, he's on the kind of team and has the kind of persona where I'm betting there's no one out there listening who went into a draft and said, ah, this is the year I'm going to get Jose Abreu. I just, and I actually don't mean that as an insult. I think you mean it as a compliment, and I think I mean it as a compliment as well. I just think maybe expectations were a little too high in the people who were drafting him, you know, sort of in that fourth to fifth round range, thinking that they had caught up to all the people who had taken first baseman ahead of them. I don't think it's quite worked out that way for them. Let's go down a couple tiers in the first base ranks and talk about Yonder Alonso, who's a guy, of course, who was originally traded to the Padres, I believe, in a Matt Latos deal, and was expected to develop a ton of power early on in his career. It didn't happen, but he could hit for batting average, and eventually he got moved to Oakland, where he struggled even further. I believe that was for Drew Pomeranz. I could be incorrect, but I think so. And then all of a sudden, you know, he ends up as a Cleveland Indian via free agency. And I think there was some pretty good hopes that lineup would have a nice effect on him. And I even heard some talk that, you know, the way he hits the ball powerfully was not going to be hindered much by the new stadium, his new stadium digs in Cleveland. But I think he's been a mild disappointment as well. How do you feel about Yonder Alonso's season so far?
It's kind of underwhelming, I guess. I think he wasn't a particularly popular draft pick. A lot of these guys who had like the breakout seasons last year, I feel like Alonso and Zimmerman and that, most people didn't take them all that highly, kind of slipping outside top 250 kind of range. So I think from that perspective, you know, maybe you're a bit disappointed, but at the same time, you didn't invest a huge amount in him in most leagues, I wouldn't have thought. He still kind of got the same issues. He still can't hit lefties. He's showing good power against them, but he's also hitting 186. So I think Cleveland are probably going to keep trying to keep him away from those. He does get benched or rested more than the average regular you'd like to have, really. And he's still a great start against righties. So if you're in a daily league and you see that there's a righty on the slate and Alonso's batting fourth in the Cleveland order, then I think you can probably count on him for some good numbers. Maybe one of those guys who's a little bit tricky to own and you have to kind of keep tabs on him, because I think he will continue to miss games over the course of the season, both when they're playing interleague stuff and just if they're facing a tough lefty. I think Cleveland are probably gonna keep trying to keep him away from those. So yeah, not the world's most exciting player, but I think you'll get 10 to 15 home runs out of him the rest of the way, and if you play the matchups, then you'll probably get some pretty nice ratios as well.
Well, it's kind of a matter to me of what kind of picture you would like to paint here. You know, he's got the lowest batting average he's had since way back in 2014, but he's also got the lowest BABIP that he's had in the last 4 years by a pretty good chunk of change as well. I would say the one thing I really don't like delving into his profile is that last year his walk rate jumped nearly 5%, you know, 4.6%. And this year he's given almost all of that back by it being almost down 4% from last year. And I don't really care for that. And maybe some of that was pressing early on. And of course, the Indians' context is that they basically played baseball in weather that no human would like to play baseball in for the first month and a half of the season. So there is some of that perhaps going on as well. But he hasn't been particularly hot lately either. He got hot for a little stretch about a month ago, and since then he is he's sort of turned back into a pumpkin. I think maybe my perception was that people who waited past Justin Smoke and past Ryan Zimmerman thought maybe that this was the underrated regression candidate. The guy who, you know, especially going to the American League and going to a lineup that can actually do pretty well when Lindor, Ramirez, and E5 are all in tune, was really going to help him. And I don't feel like that's really something that's happened. Let's talk about Ian Kinsler now. Ian Kinsler, of course, former Ranger, former Detroit Tiger second baseman. I think there's some numbers here that are pretty exciting, and some numbers here that are pretty deflating. Where is Ian Kinsler doing about what you thought he was going to do this year, or do you think he classifies as a disappointment?
Yeah, I think he does. I mean, he has been hurt as well, of course, so he's missed a bit of time. I hope the batting average would rebound more than it has, and you can obviously see his BABIP is down at 210, so I think he is getting a bit unlucky, but I also think he is making a lot of very poor contact right now. The contact rate hasn't really gone down. I think he's just making it on a lot of pitches he probably shouldn't be going after, or at least that he used to be able to maybe get around a bit quicker on. The thing is, he's still leading off the Angels most of the time, ahead of Mike Trout, who is just unbelievable. And all Kinsler really needs to do is like get on base at a decent clip, and he's going to score a ton of runs, if nothing else. So you'd like to think that would help him, and he has been much better lately. I think he's got nearly 900 OPS in June, so that's encouraging. And the power and the speed is still there. So for fantasy purposes, you're like, oh, 10 homers, 7 steals, that's okay. Could do with a better batting average. I think he's always going to be a below average BABIP guy now, as he gets slower and he's kind of a fly ball hitter as well. So I don't think we're going to see him rebound up to 300 there, but I think the average will improve. And I just think this is a guy who's nearly 36 and he's very bad against fastballs now. The bat, I think, is slowing down, and there's not an awful lot you can do to counteract that. He still seems to be able to get the bat on the ball, but he's not really able to consistently make good contact anymore. So maybe he figures out a way to approach it that makes him better. But I think overall, he's probably just going to slowly decline from here, and just need to hope that he can hang on long enough and maybe, have an average on base, and he'll probably score 100 plus runs if he just stays ahead of Trout all season.
Well, I think the oddest thing in his profile to me is that he has the lowest strikeout rate of his entire career at 8.3% this year, which I think is something that you would really think meant a lot of very good things were happening for him. You'd think if somebody, I mean, his strikeout rate in 2016 was 16.9%, and it's down to 8.3%, which is 6.3% down from last year. So that is a very good sign. I mean, his K rate and his walk rate are equal. That is relatively unheard of in this baseball era. At the same time, his on-base percentage is down below 300 for the first time basically ever in his career since he was a minor league player almost. So there's a lot of weird variables flying around with Ian Kinsler. He was on a really long bad stretch before he's gotten hot recently, and I think Darius makes a strong point that, you know, our, you know, batting leadoff in front of Mike Trout, who's having the greatest season in the history of baseball, definitely is something that lends itself to thinking that we're going to get somewhat of a rebound if he can just stay on the field. You know, he's missed like 15, 20 games off pace of what most of the players have had so far. So we'll have to see exactly how it works out. Now let's talk about Jose Quintana of the Chicago Cubs, who I think are doing what they did last year. Those Cubs, they're staying in the thick of the race, while being a tad bit disappointing. But they seem to be a team that's sort of built for the postseason, regardless. So, what do you think of Jose Quintana's 29-year-old season so far, Darius?
It's a pretty weird season for him. One thing we've always kind of counted on with him as a guy who doesn't have the most electric stuff is the control, and that seems to have gone away from him right now. Is the highest walk rate of his career. He's also got the lowest O-swing percentage of his career, so I think he's not locating those pitches outside the zone as well as he used to, and hitters aren't getting tempted with that. I think the Cubs have done some tinkering here. He's got like a huge spike in his whiffs from his changeup, as well as for his four seam. But that's actually seems to have also meant that his curveball's gone down in whiff rate, and he's not actually getting a lot of strikeouts on the changeup, which he used to do. So I think something funny is going on there, the way that they've tinkered with his pitch mix and maybe the way that he's throwing them. For whatever reason, and maybe hitters are picking up on the change when they're in two strike counts and they're able to foul it off, and that's not allowing him to get those strikeouts that they used to get. I also wonder about the catches. He's been weirdly good with Wilson Contreras, with a 2.70 ERA, and Victor Caratini he's only had three starts with, but he's got a 9 ERA in those starts, even though Contreras is one of the worst framers in baseball this year, by the stats at BP. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but I think Quintana probably is a guy who benefits from, a decent framer. And previously to this, the only time he's been kind of below average in getting called strikes was his debut season. And that was another year that he didn't get the Ks. So I think these things are all feeding into each other with him, and everything else kind of looks the same. So I think it's that control, and maybe that stems from something that the Cubs are trying to do with him, maybe hoping that they could get a little more out of him, and actually they've got a little less. So at this point, I think you hope he can kind of get back to the old Quintana, and be that solid guy, 8.5 Ks per nine, not walk too many, and just let that Cubs defense do some work behind him, which they certainly can.
Well, I also wanted to note that his home run to fly ball percentage is, quite easily the highest of his career, although it did spike upwards last year. I think one of the things that happened, and I think this is unavoidable, and the analytics community really, really, really frowns on this, but I think a lot of people thought that going to the Cubs in a full season in the National League was going to mean that perhaps he would finally have a very good season with wins. And right now he's on pace to finish with less wins than he got in 2016 with the White Sox, which I think is, lends to a large disappointment. He's also on pace for by far the fewest innings that he's ever thrown, which I think could partially be managerial is part of the issue here. Joe Maddon is a guy that's well known for using very few of his starters deep into games. And so I wonder if some of that is happening as well. So, and his ERA at 4.06, I think, people were hoping for the sub 3.5 ERA that he displayed for, most of 2013 to 2016. But the FIP and the XFIP seem to say that he is pitching right about where he is pitching to, meaning that they don't feel like he's being lucky or unlucky. So I do think he's a major variable in the rest of this season and how things go for the Cubs. And right now we haven't seen any large upticks in performance to this point. So it's going to be very curious to see if he can sort of turn this his season around. Not that he's been useless, but I think people had an idea in their head that he was going to be very useful to the Cubs. Now, this is more along the guy, the next guy we're going to talk about, this is more along the kind of guy that we usually cover on this podcast. You know, this player list is fringy, but it's not nearly as fringy as I usually go, like you like to point out regularly, Darius. So far, we've covered Josh Bell, Chris Taylor, Jose Abreu, Yonder Alonso, Ian Kinsler, and Jose Quintana. Now, let's talk about somebody that has not been mentioned basically anywhere since the late 20th round kind of selections in NFBC offseason. And let's talk about Yusmeiro Petit of the Oakland Athletics. Did you bother delving into his season and seeing what you've seen so far from him?
Yeah, I had a little look. I mean, he's kind of had a weird old career, really. I feel like every now and again he just comes out and has like this unbelievable stretch where he's striking everybody out and looks unhittable. And then he kind of goes back to having a pretty mediocre strikeout rate. And he's never walked a ton of guys. So that's kind of remained consistent. But I feel like he's been a lot of different kinds of pitcher over the course of his career. This year, the strikeouts have evaporated again. He struck out a bunch of guys last year. I think it was nearly 30%. That he kind of brought in a cutter, which was suddenly getting loads of strikeouts for him, and that's just gone away now. So I don't know. I'd need to look into him further to see what's happening there. The movement looks the same. The velocity looks the same. So whether it's just easier for hitters to pick up on now they've seen it a few times, I don't know. And he used to get a ton of foul strikes, but he's now at a career low, 20.8%, and he's hardly getting into any two strike counts because of that as well. So he's just not getting the chances to put guys away, I think. So I feel like Yusmeiro Petit is a guy who's just reinvented himself a bunch of times, and it totally wouldn't surprise me if he goes out in the second half and strikes a bunch of guys out, or if he just carries on being no strikeout guy, you know, suddenly starts getting a load of ground balls. I think probably anything could happen, and usually does with relievers when we least expect it.
Well, I mean, it's not a podcast with me without a semi-annoying rant at some point. And Yusmeiro Petit checks off a lot of the boxes that will shove me into an annoying rant. First of all, he went from the Angels to the Athletics. And, of course, the Athletics are the kind of team that thinks they're really smart and that they're going to sign a guy who has sneaky value, and they're going to flip him for, you know, some organizational talent that they're going to turn into the next Miguel Tejada. And that, of course, has not come to fruition at all this year. 5.95 Ks per nine is downright dreadful. And, you know, last year's 2.76 ERA over 91 and a third innings, now he's basically pitched half as many innings to a 3.61 ERA, and FIP and XFIP don't like him any better either. I guess part of he's the guy that I think I rolled my eyes at the most during drafts this offseason when he was taken, just because I think people thought they were being really clever. Walter McMichael, who is in our staff chat room and was on our podcast, which I think just came out yesterday or today, this week, who I really like a lot, is the guy who waves the analytics flag like crazy. And I just had this feeling every time somebody took Yusmeiro Petit in a draft this year, they thought to themselves, oh, all these other people are taking Josh Hader and they're taking Dylan Betances, but I'm going to take this multi-inning reliever who's going to make my team great. And relievers are just not nearly that predictable on a regular basis. I know we got a lot of very solid years out of Andrew Miller, and Daniel Robertson is being pretty good. But, you add those players that I just mentioned to Wade Davis, and basically you have all of the middle relievers that have been good for most of the last 4 years. So year in and year out, I think trying to bet and gamble on how good middle relievers are going to stay just really seems like a dangerous game to me. Do you think I'm overstating that? Are you rolling your eyes at me rolling my eyes? I guess that's the question, right?
I mean, I think if any people don't think that relievers are unpredictable, they probably haven't paid very much attention to relievers over the past few years. I think if I'm going to pay for a guy, I want it to be somebody like Hayter, who seems like they've just got such incredible stuff. And even then, that can backfire. I mean, Miller has let us down this season. I think a lot of people are excited about AJ Minter, who has kind of underwhelmed really in the Braves bullpen this year. And I think it's actually Dan Winkler, who, nobody drafted, who's out there getting all the strikeouts and that. So, yeah, I think there's a certain element of both arguments. I see the appeal in doing it, but I also think it's best to not waste a draft pick that's too high. I think there's a select few guys, and maybe this group is going to grow over the next few years if Gabe Kapler keeps using Sir Anthony Dominguez like he is right now. If Hayter keeps being used sometimes for saves, sometimes in the seventh, eighth, maybe these relievers are going to start to become more common, and that might be a little less unpredictable than just trying to pick up on the guy who had the great year the year before and assuming that they'll go out and do the same thing again. In middle relief. So, yeah, I can see the appeal to it, but it certainly is a very difficult thing to predict.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing after the Royals won the World Series by five and dive, just getting veteran pitchers through five innings and just praying the rest of everything went well. And they had Wade Davis and Kelvin Herrera, in front of their closer, so it worked out pretty well. But this year and in years past, it hasn't worked out. I suppose since I got past the annoying rant, we should move on to something else and find out if we get to more annoying rants or not. Let's talk about the first German-born player to make the major leagues. Somebody who was pretty hyped after like the first month or so of the season, and that's the lefty-hitting Max Kepler of the Minnesota Twins. He seems to be sort of an analytics darling. People seem to think that he does a lot of things well enough that he should break out. And I'm just wondering if Darius feels any of the same disappointment I do that this breakout certainly hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I kind of expected more. Well, maybe expected is the wrong word, but I think you could see in the profile there was some more to come from Kepler. He can clearly hit the ball very hard. I think he probably has been a little bit unlucky so far. And the approach at the plate looks great. I mean, he's another almost as many strikeouts as walks guy, which is impressive for someone who's still pretty early on in their major league career. But the actual quality of the contact is regularly not very good. And so I think, his line drive rate is very low. So you're seeing a lot of fly balls. That's why he's got such a low BABIP, such a low batting average. I don't think that's going to come up a huge amount until that approach changes. And I think maybe he's struggling a bit with selectivity and pitch recognition, which again is maybe something we should expect from someone who's still pretty early in their major league career. So yeah, the appeal is clear. I think he can hit a ball a very long way when he gets hold of one. But there's a lot more to doing those things, and I think while he cannot clearly take a walk, I think maybe the pitches that he's choosing to swing at are still not quite the right ones for him to maximize his potential.
We've also seen a pretty a downtick in the batting average this year, which I think, his plate discipline, his ability to walk sort of told us that we were hoping that he was going to spike in batting average, maybe go back to, the 282 sort of batting average that he had in AAA back in 2016. But that certainly has not happened. The Twins outfield has been very odd this year. We expected an awful lot out of Buxton. He's the high-profile disappointment by far. But when you look at, some of the players who have gotten time pretty regularly in the Twins outfield, you come up with various nouns that you weren't expecting to see, like this Johnny Field, I think his name is, or is he a he's a Ray, isn't he? But there's a Cave, there's a Grossman, there's a that you expect just random names to be out there half the time. You expect maybe to see a bus or a tree or a birch or something going on that you weren't expecting to see when the season began. And some of that obviously is injury related, and the fact that Miguel Sano seems to be a big fat lazy jerk. You know, at the same time, I don't know. It just I kept hearing hype, and there's a number of very, very smart people within the industry that were expecting very good things from Max Kepler. And I remember when he was sort of in AA, and there was this question of if he was going to be the first German-born player to ever make the bigs. And early on, I heard, you know, Keith Law and people from Baseball America, I heard them all say that Max Kepler was destined at best to be like a fourth outfielder. Then I keep thinking they're wrong, but he's not proving that they're wrong yet at this point either. Now let's talk about somebody else who I think Max Kepler's 25. Let's talk about somebody else who's, you know, on the other side of the aging curve a little bit. And let's talk about Brian McCann, traditionally been one of my least favorite players in Major League Baseball. I think people thought maybe he was going to be kind of a sneaky pick because how bad could a catcher possibly be who's had decent career offensive skills? How bad could he possibly be being the Astros catcher? Well, I think we're getting that question answered. How do you feel about Brian McCann's season so far here, Darius?
Yeah, it's kind of following just the steady downward trend, I guess, that you might expect from somebody who's in their mid-30s. He's been hurt again as well, of course, and that they did give him a ton of rest last season. I mean, I think it was almost an even split. They had a catcher, and they were so good last season, and catcher is such a bad position right now that it didn't really matter too much. I think he still probably finished pretty high among catchers with what he did put together. But the Astros have no reason to play Brian McCann every day or close to it. Max Stassi is having a very nice year. He's a great framer as well. So I think we're probably going to see close to a 50-50 split the rest of the way to keep them both fresh. And I think, you know, there's every chance that Stassi ends up being the better catcher over the course of the season as well. Stassi, by the way, is one of the weirdest rookies in baseball history. I feel like I've been hearing about him forever, and this is his sixth season in the majors, and he's still rookie eligible. He finally won't be after this year, but he's just had these tiny amount of plate appearances every season since 2013, which is quite entertaining. But I think with him there, the playing time is going to be split. You might still be able to get away with using McCann as your starting catcher in, you know, one catcher league just because the Astros are so good. But I think the upside in terms of the counting stats is capped there. And, you know, I think there's probably another number of other waiver wire catchers who maybe aren't going to have the same kind of quality of lineups around them, but are playing more often than McCann, and they may well end up with similar kind of numbers at the end of the year overall.
I think there's some irony here that Brian McCann was the catcher in New York when Francisco Cervelli was sort of miring around, and people were sort of projecting him to, you know, to get serious playing time and have value, especially in two catcher leagues. And now he goes off to Pittsburgh and has, you know, various kind of value over the seasons, but he's having his best season right now. And now we're seeing Max Stassi sort of come out from under the wings of Brian McCann. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we're at a point now where if they really needed the playoff spot, there would be an outside chance that Brian McCann would not make the playoff roster. Maybe the fact that, you know, he could be a power bat would help. But if they really are concerned about, you know, carrying enough pitching, I wonder if they would be willing to go with Gattis and Stassi and leave Brian McCann off the roster. You know, drafting catcher this past season, and I have a feeling next season as well, once you got past the top five rounds, if you didn't have a catcher, drafting a catcher felt a lot like playing Russian roulette with only one open chamber. It was really strongly unlikely that you were going to come out doing well. And that certainly has come true this year. If anything, catcher has gotten worse. I mean, Wellington Castillo has been terrible. Zunino hasn't overachieved. You know, a lot of these sort of wild card plays that people thought, you know, Wellington Castillo is suspended now, of course. But a lot of these wild card plays that people thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe I can outsmart everybody and get lucky at catcher and get this huge advantage over everyone. By and large, if you didn't take Cervelli, that's mostly not happening. I guess Wilson Ramos went outside the top five rounds, and maybe he's sort of been a strong play compared to the field, although not exactly dazzling either. So, you know, this is, I don't know what the opposite, what's the opposite of a golden era? If there is a golden era for shortstops, you know, the Nomar Garciaparra, Derek Jeter sort of age of shortstops, what exactly should be the color of the era that we're in for catching, Darius?
I mean, it feels like it should be brown or something, doesn't it? I mean, or, you know, maybe whatever the color of vomit is, I don't know, you know, sort of off green.
I had an old English teacher, that makes her sound like she was old in age. She really wasn't. But she loved the word lugubrious for something that was very dark and gloomy, because you can just kind of roll it off your tongue and say lugubrious. And really, catching is just awful. It's really surprising, because usually the player pool sort of reacts to the needs at the major league level. This has been a theory of mine over time. But fortunately for Darius, I think this is a theory that he hasn't had to hear 7,800 times, like a lot of my other theories. That players sort of figure out, well, the best way for me to get to the bigs would be for me to be a catcher. So you take a good player and, you know, and he decides, well, I'm going to learn how to catch, because, you know, obviously there's not that many good catchers at the major league level. And that seemed to happen for a while, where you had this sort of, you know, the best players were becoming shortstops because there was no shortstops at the major league level. The best players were, coming to third base because there was a real downturn in third base about 10 years ago. And then all of a sudden there's been a huge uptick in third base. Basically, the downtick was when, like, there was Troy Gloss and nobody else. And then there was this huge uptick, and I thought maybe the player pool was adjusting to the Major League Baseball needs. This is sort of my Oscar Wilde theory. We talked about thinkers of the English variety. You must be familiar with Oscar Wilde. Like, does the player pool make the rosters, or does the rosters make the player pool? You familiar with that analogy, Darius?
Yeah, I'm very familiar. We're getting quite literary this week. Who was it you asked me about earlier in the week? Oh. Dylan Thomas, I think, and somebody else.
Joseph Conrad?
Yeah, Conrad, yeah.
Yeah, Joseph Conrad and Anthony Burgess, who you might not be as familiar with. Are you familiar with him?
I know the name, but I've never read anything of his, so I'm not particularly familiar, no.
Well, he wrote Apocalypse Now, which comes with a tiny glossary.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's a novella, and it comes with a glossary of London street gang slang in the beginning of it, which I, of course, am just pedantic and idiotic enough to really enjoy. But anyway, the point being is that, you know, catcher has been so bad that Brian McCann is probably on a bunch of rosters out there yet, especially in two catcher leagues. I recently went through a stretch where I had Omar Narvaez and Mitch Garver as my catchers, and that was only in a 12-team league, so that didn't feel especially good. I started out the year with Wellington Castillo and thought maybe there was no way that Matt Wieters could be god-awful horrible in back-to-back years. That didn't work out so well. But the point being is that Brian McCann's probably on a lot of teams out there. And that was a very long-winded way of getting there. But, you know, people can use a little sidetracking every once in a while. Maybe I'm a little too stoically pressing to get just fantasy stuff out there, Darius. But let's get back to the concept of this podcast. What do you suppose this ragtag group of people has in common? Brian McCann, Max Kepler, Yusmeiro Petit, Jose Quintana, Ian Kinsler, Yonder Alonso, Jose Abreu, Chris Taylor, and Josh Bell.
Well, I have a very definitive answer this week. I don't know if it's your answer, but I certainly have an answer that is true. And that's that they've all had either extremely good or either extremely bad months so far. I think all tending towards the bad, but I noticed that every single one of them had a pretty extreme split in June, and quite a lot of them had kind of had fairly, you know, maybe a decent or poor months conversely in May as well. So I think that was the theme that I spotted.
Well, that certainly gets to what the theme of these players were for me. Ironically enough, a different podcast that I listen to on a regular basis today was talking about first and second round disappointments. And I had already made the player list before I heard that podcast. But I kind of thought that these guys were all quietly disappointing. And I think Darius is kind of getting to that point because they've played good enough that you've sort of kept them around. But then sort of if you're having a bad season, you look at your team and you go, nobody's really standing out, you know. Like, I think people thought an awful lot more of Josh Bell. I heard a lot of analytics people thinking that he was ready to take the next step forward. And I think, by and large, these players have all been, besides Abreu is obviously the highest ADP guy in this list, I think. Maybe Jose Quintana, depending on how pitching heavy your drafts went. But I think, by and large, these are players that you look at and you go, well, you know, these are the picks that aren't really helping me. And there was probably picks around these players that I should have taken instead, which would really be helping me. There definitely is that. Why don't you take a quick look at the list for us and tell us, Darius, which player you think is most likely to bounce back and live up to their draft value?
I think Abreu is the one I have the most confidence in. I think he's been fine so far, and I think he can probably be even a bit better going forward. So I have no concerns about him, really. I guess the others, to varying degrees, whether it's playing time or talent or just the fact that maybe their profiles don't quite line up for fantasy, I think I have decent concerns about all of them. I guess Taylor would be the other one that I think would be okay, just from his team context and the fact that he is still getting on base, and you know he's doing fine. I think he's an above average hitter this season, and it's just his fantasy stats are not really that great for our purposes. But I think he's been maybe 15% better than league average or something so far, which is absolutely fine for the Dodgers. I guess those are the two guys that I would expect the most from going forward, and it certainly wouldn't surprise me if Quintana joined them with how his career has been.
Well, I guess I think you pointed at the three players that I think would most be pointed at, but I guess I would point to Ian Kinsler being a guy more so because of his situation than anything else. He's in arguably sort of the best situation you could possibly be in baseball. And I would also say this, he's the one player on this list who's been especially good lately. I mean, Chris Taylor was amongst the group of Dodgers that started out so horribly bad. And obviously, I don't think anybody really thought he was going to be quite that bad. I'm doing a little look to confirm this. But Kinsler's definitely had a power outburst in recent years, in recent weeks. And I'm looking at it right now. Well, he's got five hits in his last three games, and he's got hits in five of his last six games, and he had a streak between the 6th and the 9th of June where he homered in every game. So there's definitely, he's only got one steal in recent weeks, so that hasn't sort of reared its head how we would like it to. But I think there's a ton of reasons to think that maybe Kinsler is playing a little bit better. He gets just a ton of at-bats, so if his batting average stays as poor as it is, I think that will definitely be something that hurts your team, and I think you almost have to try and make up for it. I mean, his OBP, by the way, is only at 293. But I think maybe if I had to put my bets on a player, I would put my bet on Ian Kinsler, because I think if he just had another hot streak or two, as Darius pointed out too in our analysis of him, maybe everything else could even its way out just from the team context. Looks like they'll have Ohtani back at some time this year as just a DH as well. But that was, I thought they were maybe the under-the-radar disappointments that we I haven't heard talked about on a lot of other podcasts. And I thought it would be kind of interesting to look into them and sort of see what we thought our prognosis, our prognoses, is that a word, prognoses? What do you think, Darius? Are we going to go with that?
That's one of those words that you sort of feel like that ought to be the plural, but I don't know that I ever see it pluralized, so it's probably something weird.
But yeah, it probably is. But anyway, it's just one of those things where I wanted to see if we thought there was a major bounce back coming for any of these players. And as we just noted, we see some better chances for some than we do for others. We'll start with me sort of in on our send-off from the show. Darius, I don't think I've ever felt more busy than I feel right now, which is an odd statement for a business owner who does oversees two podcasts a week. But on top of everything else I'm doing, I'm helping completely remodel a rental property of mine, and I'm also starting a three-sport league for the staff. Which basically got filled this morning, which I thought was a very good sign. But you know how when you teach for the first year, that's your hardest year. I have this feeling that running the three-sport league the first year is going to be significantly more difficult than running it in following years, because I have to – and the average person knows out there, there's probably enough people that have run leagues, that running a league is not fun. But starting a league where you have to basically – draft and start three leagues at exactly the same time is even less fun. Can you imagine that's the case, Darius?
Yeah, I can certainly can. I wonder if Justin's having a similar experience with doing DGFBI this year. I can't imagine trying to set up 195 people for some leagues. So yeah, I'm sure it will get easier as it goes, but it sounds like a lot of work initially.
Yeah, it sure is. Darius, why don't you give us your Twitter handle once more and tell us anything special you got going on, and we'll get out of here.
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. The TGFBI waiver wire column continues today over at Baseball Prospectus. So this week took a little bit of a weird angle to it, and I actually kind of looked at sort of the theory and the practice behind how you decide how much FAB to bid, and how maybe we think we're being random when we're not. And so I kind of broke down all the bids we've had so far this year and looked at the patterns that emerged and the weird things that people gravitate towards. So that was kind of a fun one to write. So go check that out. You can also find me over at Batflips and Nerds. We've got a ton of content right now. As I mentioned, John just came back from Boston, so he's been doing some really great pieces, including the one about him going to see Vlad Jr. In New Hampshire. So that was a really good read. And we've got a ton of podcasts going, including an interview with a former major leaguer coming next Monday, which I'll be doing. So I'll tease that. I won't say who it is, but very excited about talking to him. And we also have plenty of regular pods as well with us talking nonsense about baseball. So if you just can't get enough of me talking nonsense about fantasy, then we kind of take a pretty weird angle on everything, and we get some pretty weird listener questions as well from our British fans. So do check that out too.
Well, Darius, I'm going to tote you and your theoretical work. I'm going to tote you as our great European thinker amongst the FWFB staff. That's pretty high praise, is it not? Of course, you might be the only European on staff, so maybe you take more offense to it than compliment. But I meant it as a compliment. So anyway, I feel like I'm doing some good things for the site right now, but I'm certainly not pumping out writing content as much as I would like. But fortunately, we've had a lot of great contributions from the recent additions to our staff. We actually have four or five people who basically do nothing but write. They don't even podcast. Why would they do that, Darius? Isn't the podcasting the most fun?
Yeah, I love doing the podcast. Obviously, I like the writing too, but I actually do quite a lot. I probably should. I feel every time I do some prep, I sort of think maybe I should like just put this in a post one day, because I like look up all this stuff about players and then like I never use it again after I've talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
I also see people tweet things, don't they? I feel like maybe I should save some of my stats and go, oh, I didn't use this on the pod today, but here's a stat about so-and-so.
Yeah, like my tweet that I gleaned that recently, I don't know if you saw it, that Well, of course he did, because I think you commented back about Luis Castillo, about how swinging strike rate seems to be the stat of the year, and Luis Castillo has hovered in the top four or five in swinging strike percentage for the season. So our beloved stat has, right in the middle of it, a player who is failing miserably for fantasy purposes, despite excelling in that stat in and of itself. Which, you know, I've done a lot of theory about that, and maybe that's something that we should talk about at a later date, about how you can fail with a great swinging strike rate. I mean, you can make people swing and miss a ton and then decide that you're going to throw lollipops thigh high and watch them travel 475 feet on your other pitches, which isn't usually the case, but, you know, I wonder if that's the problem with young pitchers. You know, they have a tendency to make more mistakes trying to throw their other breaking stuff, etc. So anyway, so this has been a pod quiz podcast. Thanks so much, Darius, for your time. We had to fly solo again this week. I will continue to we'll continue to get JR on as often as he can. He's a hardworking man, and his company in Philadelphia seems to be in great need of him at this time. So we'll see if we get JR back next week. He is going to be in the three-sport league. So I apologize, Darius. You'll have to hear a lot about this three-sport league going forward. And unfortunately, it's not something that that suits you very well, since soccer is not one of the sports. So anyway, thanks everyone for the listen. I appreciate it. And we'll keep pumping out the best content we possibly can for you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Have yourself a great baseball and life week. Why not have a good one all the way around? Thanks again.